I mentioned last week at the close of our worship service, for those who are here, that sometimes, you know, as a pastor, I'm here and I'm preaching every Sunday morning, but there are several churches in our city that meet in the evenings. And so a lot of times on Sunday evenings, I'll leave my house and I'll go into the city, or I'll go all around Brooklyn to find churches that have evening services. And just as an opportunity for me to go learn from someone else, to worship in a church where I don't have responsibilities, and just to hear a sermon for myself, it's good for my soul to do that. Well, one evening, my wife and I decided to load up our kids, hop on a train, and visit a church in Manhattan. And this is a very, very well-respected church in the city. A church, hundreds of adults, hundreds of college students attend this church. It's college students from NYU and all over the city. And we were excited about visiting this church because we heard all the wonderful things that God was doing through them and all the great things that they were doing as a church. And so we got there and there was no signs to the kids ministry. And we were like, okay, what do we do with our kids? And so we had to like hunt people down and find the results, find the answers to where the kids go. And finally somebody was like, oh yeah, I think they're downstairs. And so we go into like this dungeon-like area, and we find the area where the kids are there, and the pastor's wife is in there watching her own kids, and there's no other kids. The nursery was the pastor's children and our children that night. And now, that's not to say there's anything wrong with this church. God's doing an incredible work with them among college students and adults, but that part of the city, and there just weren't any kids in that church. And I just remember thinking, like, as much as I appreciate what God's doing in their church, just over the years, as I've been praying for Crossroads and as I've seen our church grow, it just makes me so thankful that that is not true of our church. It makes me so thankful that on any given Sunday, 1/3 of our church is under the age of 10. And then we have 10, 15, 20 volunteers a week that are serving our kids every week. And it just makes me so excited that God is blessing our church with young people. And I think that's an indicator of a healthy church, a church that is reaching the next generations. And I think that's something we should celebrate, but I think it also should be something that motivates us as a church, because those kids and those teenagers, with them comes a responsibility to show them the beauty and the love of Jesus so that they can grow up to know Him, worship Him, and love His church. Kyle said earlier that we don't see our kids' ministry as babysitting so that you can come in here and enjoy a service distraction free. We see our kids' ministry as disciple making. It is ministry. In fact, that is, I mean, in many ways, we talk about reaching people in our neighborhood. We talk about reaching people in our city and around the world. I think that the thing we'll be held most accountable for by God is, did we preach the gospel to the children that He entrusted us with, entrusted to us? And so kids' ministry is not something you do to just go babysit. It is ministry. And if you're wondering, how in the world can God use me? How in the world can God use me to make a difference in the world? The first step is sign up to serve in Crossroads Kids. Because you can have an impact on the lives and the children of the people that God has placed right in front of you in our church. And our text for today, as I mentioned, is Psalm 144. And in this text, David has just taken the throne as the king of Israel. Saul has died. David is now on the throne, but the nation is at war. And it's difficult when a leader takes over a nation when it is at war. And so you have to be a strong leader in this point. And so David, he's thinking, what should I be praying for this nation that I'm taking over? We're at war. But David had a vision for what Israel could become. And in this psalm, David, he's praying for the nation that he's now leading. And he begins by, of course, praying for peace and for prosperity. If you read Psalm 144, he begins, he says, you know, God, would you end the war that we're in? Would you bring peacetime to our nation? Would you give us prosperity? And in the second half of this passage, starting in verse 12, he says, God, if you grant us peace, we want prosperity as well. And then he prays his vision for what he wants the nation to become. And we're just going to focus on two sentences of that prayer today. And it's two sentences that are so incredible to me. He says this is his vision for what the nation of Israel can be and what blessing of a nation looks like. He says, verse 12, may our sons in their youth be like plants full grown, and our daughters like corner pillars cut for the structure of a palace. And what I love is that he doesn't say, God, may my sons and daughters be like this. And he doesn't say, may your sons and daughters be like this. He's not speaking to the nation of Israel. He says, our sons and daughters. He says, he's essentially, hey, see, this isn't a verse about parenting. This is a prayer for a nation, for a community. And I think it very much could just as well be a prayer for Crossroads Christian Church. See, when we say Family Ministry Sunday, we don't mean Families Ministry Sunday. We mean family. One of the core values of our church is that we collectively are a family. And so Family Ministry Sunday doesn't mean we're celebrating families. It means we're celebrating our family, which includes the kids that God has given us. And when David says, our sons and daughters, I think we as well, when we look at these kids on the stage, we can say our sons and daughters as a community. If they prosper, we prosper. That means that whether you're a parent or grandparent or not, whether you have children, whether you don't, whether you have a family, whether you don't, family ministry is for you. It's for all of us. Because the kids that are in this community ought to be a part of our lives as a faith community. Because if they prosper, we prosper because they are a part of us. My daughter, who was up here dancing around, she was hugging her little brother or big brother a little bit. She's been talking about her birthday party a lot lately, and her birthday is not until August, but she's thinking a lot about her birthday party. And, you know, my wife asked her, said, Edith, who do you want to invite to your birthday party? And she said, Brooklyn and Mila and Andrea. Brooklyn and Mila are her little friends. Andrea is our friend. But in Edith's mind, there's no difference. Because Andrea goes to our church. And Andrea comes over to our house and has meals with us. And she's part of our community. To Edith, Andrea is her friend. Where are you at, Andrea? I think she's serving with our kids, with our tutors. But to my daughter, Andrea is part of her life. She's not our friends, it's her friend. Same thing, Erica Pang, who's serving with our babies right now, she just got back from a trip where she visited old friends and family in Hong Kong. And yesterday she came over to our house and brought us some gifts that she had gotten while she was over there. And she got gifts for the kids. And one of the gifts she got for my daughter, Edith, once again, was she got her some hair bows and some barrettes, some Hello Kitty ones. And Edith was snuggling in the bed with us this morning, and she had put her Hello Kitty barrette in her hair. And she said, Dad, look at my barrette. It's so beautiful, isn't it? I said, yes, sweetheart, that is so beautiful. She said, yeah, my friend Erica got it for me. You see, my daughter gets it. She's not an accessory to the church. She's part of the church. And she sees you and the rest of us as part of her life, not some people who just kind of see her as something else. She's part of this family. See, my 4-year-old daughter sees herself as part of this family, so we must see her as part of this family as well. That's why David says, our sons and daughters. So our vision for kids and students at Crossroads is that we believe that everyone ought to be involved in some way in the growth and the formations of the kids that God has entrusted us. That could be serving in Crossroads Kids or Crossroads Students, which I encourage everyone to do one of those things. It could also mean we're doing so well generosity-wise this year. We're ahead of our budget that we had planned. But one of the things that we really want to accomplish in the next 6 to 9 months is we want to hire a kids director who focuses all their energies on kids. And we can't afford that right now. So one of the ways you can invest in kids is be generous. But what do we want for our kids? We want everyone to be involved in the formation of these kids, but what do we want for them? And I love what David prays. He says, may our sons in their youth be like plants full grown, and our daughters like corner pillars cut for the structure of a palace. And what I love about this passage is it's a reversal of what we might expect. He prays the boys would be like plants, and the girls would be like pillars. See, we might expect it to be the other way around because when we think of plants, we think of color and beauty and vibrancy. When we think of pillars, we think of strength. And our culture typically defines masculinity by strength and femininity by beauty. And what are we to make of David's vision for Israel's sons and daughters? Look at the first thing. He says, our sons are like plants full grown. See, when you consider the metaphors, you actually find, though, that David isn't saying that boys should not be strong or that girls should not be beautiful. But what he's calling us to consider is what it means to raise up children who are both. Because this is what our world needs. And when it comes to the sons, he says, I want our sons to be like plants full grown. And some think this is a reference to Psalm 1, which addresses the characteristics of a mature and godly man. And Psalm 1 says that a mature and godly man is like a tree, no longer a plant, but a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. In other places in the Old Testament, it uses terms like oaks of righteousness to refer to what a godly and mature man is. So when David says, may our sons be like plants full grown, he's imagining a small and colorful plant that grows into a strong and beautiful oak tree, perhaps. I used to live in Raleigh, North Carolina when I was in grad school. And Raleigh is known as the city of oaks because of all the oak trees. And in fact, Raleigh's a pretty big city. It's a mid-sized, one of the fastest growing cities in America right now. And when you fly over the city, you would expect to see bustling traffic and all this sort of stuff in buildings. But you can hardly see any of that because the whole city is covered by oak trees. And so when you're flying in, you're like, it's just beautiful green. It's gorgeous. These green oak trees. But when you're on the ground, the oak trees actually serve a purpose. My wife and I, when we were in Raleigh, North Carolina, we lived in a very historic suburb. One of those, like in the movies, where there was a main street and old Victorian houses, and there were oak trees that lined the streets. And there's this beautiful, beautiful street. It was just shade all over with the oak trees. And when I would go for a run, it was always so cool because even if it was pouring down rain or it was snowing or the weather was bad or there was wind or whatever, I could virtually stay dry because the oak trees were so large and strong and they covered the entire street that they protected everything under them. See, the trees provided both beauty and protection. And I think this is what David is getting at. And when he says beauty, he doesn't mean good looking. See, David knew better than anyone. Remember, David was chosen as king, not because of his physical appearance, but because of what was in his heart. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And that's why God selected David to be the king of Israel. And so David, when he talks about being beautiful, he's not talking about being physically attractive. He's talking about the heart. And this is the vision that we should have for our boys, that they would have beautiful hearts, and that they would grow to be protectors. See, C.S. Lewis has a very famous quote where he says, "We make men without chests and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst." And when I first heard this quote years ago, I was thinking of men that aren't masculine, men that aren't tough. But this quote actually isn't talking about physical strength. This quote comes from an essay where C.S. Lewis talks about the crisis of masculinity in our time. And he says that we focus so much on the outward and the physical when it comes to our boys that we don't spend adequate time cultivating within them a concern for virtue, beauty, and godliness. When he says men without chests, he isn't talking about men with small pectoral muscles. He's talking about men with hollow hearts. Men without hearts. He's talking about chests that are empty. I recently tried to watch a Netflix show called 13 Reasons Why. Only made it a few episodes in. It was just too painful to watch for me, so I just couldn't handle it. Some of you may be familiar with this show, but one of the major themes of the show kind of shows how American culture has a flawed understanding of what it means to be a man. And the show, it kind of covers, probably pretty too graphic for me to recommend the show, but it covers sexual abuse within high schools and teenage boys that leverage their physical strength to take whatever it is they desire from their female classmates. It also shows jocks bullying the boys in the school who enjoy art or don't fit within the categories of what it means to be a, quote, man. And when I think about sexual abuse, and when I think about the Me Too movement that's going on in our country right now, perhaps the catalyst for all the abuse that's happening in our country, the crisis of masculinity, men using their physical strength to overtake women rather than to love and serve them. I think that the problem is that maybe perhaps the catalyst for all this abuse is that we have raised generations of boys in America that see strength as the primary value of what it means to be a man. And as we have focused too heavily on strength, we have neglected the matters of the heart, and we've created generations of men who are physically strong, but their hearts are ugly and their chests are empty. And so they don't have the ability to empathize or show compassion. There's not Christ-likeness. There's just strength. But to teach our sons what it means to be Christ-like is to lay their strength down for the sake of others. And David's vision for the sons of Israel and my prayer for the sons of Crossroads is that our boys would first be beautiful. Hearts of virtue and character and humility, concern for the weak and the poor, and that they would leverage their strength to protect rather than to abuse, that they would leverage their strength for the sake of others rather than themselves. See, our sons cannot be truly strong in the biblical sense until they're first beautiful. And so how do we create this? Jesus tells us by continuing the plant metaphor. In John 15, he says, "Abide in me and you will bear much fruit." And our world needs men who will bear godly fruit. And the way that that will happen is by boys knowing this from an early age, that true strength and true beauty comes from abiding in the love and in the mercy and in the message and in the gospel of Jesus. And then David says, our daughters are like pillars. Our daughters are like corner pillars cut for the structure of a palace. You see, I'm a father of two little girls, a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. And one of the things that regrettably I have to stay aware of in my parenting of these girls is that I don't celebrate them for their looks more than I do for their intellect and their character. See, I love to dote on my children. I like to kiss them. I like to hug them. I like to celebrate them. I like to compliment them. And every time my little Edith or my little Annie walks into the room, my instinct is always to say, "Oh, you're so gorgeous. You're so pretty. Oh, I love your dress. Oh, I love your hair. Edith, I love your bow. You're so pretty." And I have to catch myself, though, because I always want my daughters to know, I want them to know that I think they're beautiful. But they're so much more than just beauty. They're so much more than just the dress that they're wearing or the haircut that they have. Or they're so much more than what they look like on the outside. And so for every "you're so pretty," I try to balance with 10, "Oh, you're so smart. You're so creative. You're so brave. Edith, I love your imagination. I love your imagination. You're so smart. I love you." See, we live in a world where women are objectified for their appearances and often not valued for their wisdom and their courage. And I believe that in the church of Jesus, we should be leading the way in showing the world the power and the dignity of women. And that starts with teaching our girls the power and the strength that they possess within them. And David refers to the daughters of Israel as pillars cut for the structure of the palace. Translation, load-bearing pillars. If you came in and Samsoned those pillars right there, this whole thing would fall. And David says that our daughters are like load-bearing pillars, that if they crumble, if they don't live up to their full potential, all of the nation will suffer. The whole thing, the whole structure crumbles if our women, if our girls don't grow into be all that God has for them. See, girls, David says they are there to support the weight of a massive structure. Our daughters are to be taught that they are structural necessities to the world around them, not merely peripheral contributors. And the world often tries to reduce our daughters into pretty little things. But to quote an article I read this week, one woman writes in her blog, she says, "Although I am constantly awestruck by the physical beauty of my daughters, I will not encourage them to find their value in it. The years will tear at it. Others will objectify it. An accident could alter it. And in the end, death will destroy it. I want to be a part of a church community that places an importance on our daughters, not because of their fleeting physical beauty, but because of their importance, their strength, and the absolute necessity of their presence." And the only way to teach our girls that what matters is who they are and their strength and their courage and their bravery and their wisdom and their intellect is for them to know, because the world is going to try to objectify them. But they need to know who they are in Christ. And that is that they are a son or a daughter. They're a daughter of the King. This is David's vision for the daughters of Israel. And it's my prayer for the daughters of Crossroads that they would possess a confidence in who God has made them. Not as objects, but as necessary contributors to the world around them. that our girls would know that they cannot be truly beautiful until they recognize that they are first strong in Christ. You see, this is why we care about children at Crossroads. And I believe that many of the ills that we face in today's culture can be reversed if a new generation of godly men and women rise up within the next generations. Generations of men and women who know their worth and what it means to be strong and beautiful. And this doesn't happen by accident. This happens by us investing in the generation that is coming after us. Which means this is why it's important for our church to love our children. Because it's actually caring for the world. Because if we can teach these kids to know who they are in Christ, to know what it means to be both strong and beautiful, beautiful and strong, they can change the world. But that doesn't happen by accident. See, David became a king during wartime. And he knew that if this vision for the sons and daughters of Israel would become a reality, Israel must first experience peace. Same is true with our kids. If they're going to become the men and women that God wants them to be, they must first know peace. This is why the most important thing that we can teach our kids, the foundation for them becoming plants and pillars, is this: they must know the gospel of Jesus and what it says about them. That through his death, through Jesus' death and through his resurrection, he has defeated sin and death. He has taken our shame and our guilt, and he gives us peace. If our sons are to be full-grown plants and our daughters are to be palace pillars, they must first know who God made them and what it costs his son to bring them peace. And as we invest in our kids and teach them the gospel, they, Lord willing, the Spirit will honor that, and they will grow into be men and women of God who will change their generation for Jesus. My story, I give you bits and pieces here and there in my preaching of how I became a Christian, but one of the ways it happened was I grew up in church. I went to Bible school, I went to all the Bible clubs, and I did all those sort of things, but when I was in high school and when I was in college, I ran very far from God. But there was a time in college where I had gotten mixed up with the wrong crowd. I had kind of been in the middle of just all these things. And one night, I remember sitting in my dorm room, and the just shame came over me, over the life I was living, over the fact that I was running from God. And in that moment, the Spirit gave me the ability to quote, right off the top of my head, Romans 12, 1 and 2. Do not be conformed to the image of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And in that moment, well, how did I know that verse? Because it had been taught to me as a child for years and years and years and years and years as a kid. And even though I had not cracked open my Bible in years at that point, or months at that point, in that moment when the shame and the guilt of my life and my sin swept over me, God used all my Sunday school teachers, God used my parents, God used all those people that had invested in me and taught me the Bible when I was young to recall it to my mind. And it showed me in that moment how I could give my life to him. People say, who led you to Christ? I can name you 60 men and women who served in the Sunday school, who served in my youth group, that planted all the seeds and created all the steps that led me to that moment where I gave my life to Jesus in a dorm room. See, this is why these things matter. And one day, Lord willing, every one of those kids, when you ask them, how did you come to know Christ? They'll stand up and they'll say, Olga Rodriguez taught me the gospel in Crossroads Kids. Or Julie Lang helped me learn a song about God's mercy. Or Emily Mueller in this and that. I pray that that would be the story of our kids, don't you? And we're going to move. If our kids ready? Our kids are going to come on in here, and we're going to move into a time of communion. They're going to be up here, I think, another song for us. And I want to say a little word while our kids are in here about what communion is. Communion, your kids are going to want to take the bread and the cup. They're going to see you doing it. They're going to go, oh, I want a snack. I want a snack. The Lord's Supper is for followers of Jesus. It's for those who have embraced Christ, who those have trusted in him, and they have received the peace and the salvation of Jesus by trusting in him and his resurrection to save us from the shame and the guilt and give us new life. And every week when we drink the cup and to remind us of Jesus' blood shed for us, and we eat the bread to remind us of Jesus' body broken for us, we do this as a response to what God has already done in our hearts. And all throughout church history, the Lord's Supper has been reserved for those who have trusted in Jesus and have been baptized. See, for this reason, we actually ask that if your children have not made their own profession of faith, Don't let them take the cup and the bread this morning. Because parents, they're going to want to. And when they see you taking the bread and the cup, and the reason, and then later today, they're going to ask you on the walk home, they're going to say, well, why couldn't I have the bread and the cup? And you'll have an opportunity to share the gospel with them. See, we want them to see their mom and their dad and everyone else in this church participate in this communion. And as they ask questions about what we're doing, what does the blood represent? What does the cup represent? What does the bread represent? We have an opportunity to share with them the gospel of Jesus. And we can tell them that before they can receive this small symbolic meal, they can taste the real thing in Jesus. And so if you guys will stand, I think our kids are going to come in a moment. Are they ready? And we're going to sing some songs. And if you would come take the bread and the cup.